The character of Claudette Wims began on the Shield as a detective, just one of many working in the squad room at one of the bullpen desks. But after many long years and frustrating delays, she's finally been promoted to captain. A testament not only to her talents, but to those of the actress playing her, CCH Pounder. Terry spoke with Pounder last year. Both the character and the actress make quite an impact in this scene, in which Wims is interrogating a suspect with a horrible scar on his face. She doesn't know that the person who gave him the scar is Detective Vic Mackey.
You've got a lot on your plate. Where'd you find the time? Drug trafficking, consolidating a Mexican power base, murder. Am I leaving anything out? Oh, yeah. Juvenile rape.
So you say.
Let's hope that genius IQ means you know how to help yourself. We've got you on tape making a death threat.
That could be anyone's voice. I'll challenge it in court.
What about the testimony of a cop with his own grill mark? You gonna challenge that, too? What happened to your face? It used to be so pretty.
I'll only give my confession to Detective Mackey.
You don't make demands, not to me.
Now, for anyone listening to you who's a fan of The Shield, they'll be able to hear that your accent as you're speaking to us now is a little different than how Claudette sounds.
Right, right.
What's the difference?
I'm from British Guiana, which is now Guyana. I grew up in England, and I came here as an adult. I spent 7 years working on American accents, and then Peggy Rogers, who was, by the way, from Philadelphia, was one of my friends in college. And I said to her, Peggy, I need to speak the way you speak. And that's how we started. And basically, for the first 3 years of my friendship with Peggy, I stole her voice and would use it for auditions and so on. And then as the years have gone by, it's sort of become that sort of mid-Atlantic, in the middle accent that I do use for work, because a black British actress, when I arrived here, didn't have that much to do except go to auditions and people have you call, always have callbacks and kind of go, listen to this one talk. And I always thought that was the oddest thing. But now, you know, years have gone by and we're much more international and aware of the rest of the world.
So would you show up at the audition speaking to the casting director in your more mid-Atlantic voice so that they wouldn't be prejudiced against
Oh, absolutely.
Your British accent?
Absolutely, because unfortunately, there's a lot of things in America that sort of go with black. I mean, I've actually been told by directors, could I be more black? And I would say sort of, well, just look at me and tell me what exactly do you want, because I can't get much blacker than I physically am. But what attitude would you like? So it's forced them to describe human feelings in a much higher range than usually when I'm around. You know, it's been really fascinating because this is a kind of sidebar, Terry. The thing about being black and having a different accent in the beginning is that it makes you foreign, and then it does not make you, how can I use this word? I'll say it, and then you edit it some other way, a nigger. And so that with your accent, you are somewhat protected always by being foreign. But I wanted to be an American actress coming from England. I knew that that was where the real stories would be. And it would take England much, much longer to come up with these stories. They're just getting their feet wet now. And this is 25 years ago. And I subjected myself to that feeling so that when people talk to you and you receive those insults and barbs, and I replied just the way with my same neck jerk and I gave them what for, and you kind of become a part of society. It's part of the whole assimilation system, really. And the moment that you're not foreign, then you get hurts and pains and pangs that you are no longer protected by your foreignness, which people, regardless of your color, always give you the opportunity of giving you graciousness, politeness. They give you the excuse of, well, they're not from here, so they really would not understand.
So,
does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that in a second, but first I wanted to ask you, you used what we often call the N-word. Do you want us to use that word, or did you want us to edit it out?
I couldn't find another word. That really is the word.
That's the word. Mm-hmm.
That's the word. I had never been called it until I got an American accent. That's really important.
That's really
interesting.
Do you understand what I'm saying? I think that's really, yes. Really interesting. So tell me more what you think that says about people's assumptions about African Americans and black people from other countries.
It is with the same wonderfulness that French people treat African Americans and the disdain that they treat Africans.
Mm-hmm.
It is with the same difference that the British treat African Americans compared to how they treat West Indians, part of their colonies. And therefore, America does the same with African Americans because we African Americans here are their colonized people of who were the underbelly people, the lower strata people. So I hope that's really, really clear. I really want it to be clear.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David B. Cooley. We're continuing our salute to the FX series The Shield, which is now in its sixth season. Let's get back to Terry's interview with CCH Pounder, who plays Claudette Wims. This season, Claudette finally has been promoted to captain, and Detective Vic Mackey, played by Michael Chiklis, is being pressured into a forced retirement. In this scene from the season opener, Wims is giving Mackey the bad news, or trying to.
This came directly from the chief's office.
This puts my retirement effective immediately.
If you take it now and the chief will see, you get a piece of your pension.
Why now? I had until my 15 mark.
Certain things are in motion. This is a lifeline. Sign this, and it'll save us all a lot of grief. If you don't...
You can't cut me loose.
It's not my idea.
Brass is going to be watching every move you make. You need me to make this place work.
I need people I can trust.
So you won't help me fight this?
You know a reason I should.
Quentin showed up at another clinic. Uni spooked him. He's got hostages.
Who are you going to trust with that?
In earlier seasons of The Shield, it appeared that Claudette might be promoted to captain, but again and again she was passed over, which angered not only Wims, but many viewers as well.
I was trying to be captain for quite a while, this character, and when I didn't get it the first time and Glenn Close's character got it, I tell you, the news, the letters, the emails were amazing. I had no idea that it would have such an impact, but it went to the bottom line of American racism and how
really? Like
people
they gave it to a white
themselves.
Actress, that kind of
Absolutely.
Thing?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Oh, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, you really forget that out in the world there, somehow it translates to a sort of a real place for many, many people. So that was about being shoved aside just like it is in the real world, and people were quite angry and very pissed off. And so they have been sending letters going, if they don't give you that job, I'm gonna. If they don't do that, and they were very clear. I'm leaving the blanks out, but
right.
They were very clear about how they felt.
Just for our listeners for any listeners who haven't been following The Shield, Glenn Close was the guest star for a whole season. And when you were passed over for captain, she became the captain. So
right.
Now your character and your character's fans, were resentful that she was passed over and Glenn Close got the job as captain. Were you, as an actress, resentful? Did you expect that your character was going to be made captain, and were you sorry that Glenn Close came in and took the position?
Oh, no, far from it. As a matter of fact, our writers must find me to be probably the most unusual actress that they've dealt with, because I think many of us want to be in a position that reflects real life, like upward mobility. They're the center of attention. And it's not necessarily my interest as an actor. My fascination is, how do human beings get themselves out of this particular corner of a box? And usually they would call an actress in and say, okay, we're going to do this season. And I usually say, I don't want to know about it. Just write the script and I'll figure it out. And that's very tough for a lot of other actors to believe and or take.
Now, in addition to your regular part on The Shield, you've done a lot of the crime shows. You've done Law and Order and Cagney and Lacey and Hill Street Blues. And I mean, have you done a lot of victims and you know, perps on those shows?
In the beginning, I did. In the beginning, I was the sniveling wife with the crying baby, selling crack for medication for her children, or being accosted by her husband, abused by her husband. I spent a couple of years literally just crying on cue. And I think it was actually Miami Vice. Miami Vice, I played a mother on crack who sold her child for crack cocaine. And at the end of it, I had a marvelous time, by the way, in terms of acting. I had a great time. And at the end of it, I looked back and I went, I never want to do this again. Because I had by this time discovered how powerful television really, really is. Television is this incredibly powerful medium that people blur the lines between reality and fiction and take it as gospel. So I decided that after that, I'm going to play some women of worth, of character, of strength, of authority, educated, because the people who were watching me needed to see something that was far more uplifting than what I had been doing.
So what did you do, like sit home and wait for people to offer you uplifting roles?
I did, and I starved for about a year and a half. And I remember distinctly calling my agent and saying, okay, well, I'm really sort of 6 cents in the cookie jar now. So whatever comes next, I'm going to have to take it. And it was a script for not Law and Order, L.A. Law, the very first one, L.A. Law. And I got the entire script, and there was a miserable little person that I was meant to read for. And then there was the character of the judge, and I said, I want to read for the judge. And I was told that no black woman had read for the judge yet, and they didn't think they would let you in to do it. And I insisted, and my agents backed me up. And I went and read for the judge, and they were all like, oh, wow, I guess, yeah, she could be a judge. She could be a judge. There are black judges aren't there. That was one of the quotes I heard in the room. There are black judges aren't there. I mean, that are women. And somebody said, I'll look it up. I remember a young kid. And I got that job.
Well, you know, since we were talking about different accents before and different voice placements, I'm wondering, like, in your years as a victim on TV shows, mm-hmm. on crime shows, was there a certain kind of voice that you would use for that?
Well, it was kind of always high and kind of whiny, and then I'm not quite sure where she went, but she was over there, and I had the children down. They were like down two stairs, and I just don't know where they are right now, but it was kind of like that, an endless parade of that. So, you know, after a while, you got really nasally.
And why that voice? What matches about that voice with the kind of victim that you had to play?
For some reason, high and seems, I guess, in the minds of people, female, therefore vulnerable, therefore less than, you know, somebody who needs aid, come to the one's rescue. It's really true.
Now, in your role on The Shield, you use a very deep version of your voice.
Right. I like the professionalism of that. I like the fact that...
Oh, it's power, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It is. It is a maleness that I don't have physically, but I try to ground that maleness, that boys' club, in the sound of her voice. And by doing so, she gets almost instant authority. And I'm always trying to lose weight, and they're always happy when I'm heftier. So it's sort of that sort of hefty look with the deep voice and piercing eyes. It's like, yes, that's Claudette Wims. But, you know, it's part of human nature that we certainly recognize signage, and that really is signage.
Let's get back to Terry's 2006 interview with CCH Pounder. She plays Claudette Wims, a longtime detective and recently promoted captain on the FX series The Shield.
No, it's interesting. You spend a lot of time in Africa, too, because your husband's from Senegal and runs a museum there. So you're in Senegal a good deal of the time. So you're also a black person in Africa. And what are some of the assumptions you've run into there?
Well, in Africa, I would be called a Tubab, which means white for some people, but really it means foreign. And so it's the same. I'm very well treated in Africa because there's the assumption that I'm also exceedingly rich. And I have the status. The first foreigners that came were white, maybe Portuguese, and they had the white people were the Tubabs, so I've heard them call me, not that lady, the Tubab lady. And they know exactly who I would be.
And do they think that you're rich because you're foreign or because you work on television?
Well, they haven't seen me. Oh, yes, they have seen me on television now. But in the beginning, no, because you're from outside. It just really means, you know, coming from another place.
Now, does being an actress and a successful one and being on a series like The Shield get you a ticket out of all of those assumptions about how race or country define you?
Oh, yeah, sometimes, because that makes you different. You know, you're more iconic. So you can be in the presence of, say white people. You're in the presence of white people. They're talking about black people negatively. They see you, but they don't mean you. You're different. So you become iconic. And that's very common. I know many, many people are very aware of that.
So have you used different versions of your accent and different versions of American regional accents in your roles in television, knowing some of the implications that accents have in terms of the assumptions people make about others?
All the time. And everyone does it all the time. It's just the difference between, you can speak in scatologically around amongst your friends and they understand what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
You speak better towards your parents. You speak in a very formal way towards people that you've never met before. And so imagine, Terry, that I am from a very interracial family in terms of where we grew up. So I was born in Guyana, which has a kind of accent like that. And everybody speaks a little bit on the high side. And good morning, girl. It's so nice to see you. That's where I started. And then you ended up in England. So I did speak the Queen's English and it was in a boarding school. So it's very, very proper. And then you got to America, but you didn't land in, say, Maryland. You landed in Brooklyn. So I've got an edge as well. So while I'm speaking at my dinner table, you could hear all of those accents all within one conversation. It just sounds like the Tower of Babel, but we all seem to manage and get along.
Now, you grew up in British Guiana, and I know you must be asked all the time the question I'm about to ask you, which is, did you know anybody who was involved in any way with Jim Jones' cult group in Jonestown? Now, that might have been French Guiana and not British Guiana?
No, it was in British Guiana.
It was in British Guiana?
Yeah, it was in British Guiana. And no, I didn't know. And in fact, not many Guyanese people knew about Jim Jones until after the fact, until the airport incident, until it was literally all over, because the people were from the United States. And I don't know if you know the back history. This was when Guyana was opening up its land for development and was offering land, you know, from peoples from all over the world to come there and develop the land, and they would get sort of 70% and the government would get 30%. So Jim Jones's group were the first Americans that came and created that extraordinary tragedy. And very few Guyanese people know about them because they were in the interior. And as you may or may not know, Guyana is mostly occupied right at the water's edge in Georgetown. That's the majority of the people. We don't even have 1 million people in Guyana. It's a small, small population and a really primordial kind of country. It's the real deal jungle. It's the orchids hanging from the branches. It's anaconda and all manner of strange-looking creatures and bright yellow frogs and just an exquisite place, but that kind of raw, scary beauty that you expect King Kong to come swinging around the corner. And so people have hugged mostly to the edges, which is Georgetown, the biggest, the capital and the biggest city, and that's right on the coast. And there are a few interior towns, New Amsterdam and Bartica, but where Jim Jones was, not a lot of people knew them.
So how much contact did you have with the jungle?
As I was growing up as a kid, none whatsoever, because I was on a sugarcane estate or plantation, and that was a clear jungle. This was miles and miles of sugarcane and canals, lots of water everywhere.
Did your family own the plantation or work on the plantation?
My father was the first African to, he was the second in command at Versailles Estate.
Now, I also read that your parents didn't really want you to be an actress. They didn't have a lot of respect for the profession.
Right. My parents are sort of staunch West Indians. They love a work ethic. They believe in doctors, lawyers, something concrete, something that does something for the world. And acting was sort of like, you know, closer to the first oldest profession as far as they were concerned. They thought this was a waste of an education and somewhat sleazy.
And obviously you disagreed.
That's putting it nicely. I did disagree, but I'm telling you, it took me a very, very long time to say out loud, I am an actress, and I'm an actor. It took me a long time. If I was working as a secretary, I'd be proud to say I'm a secretary. You know, I'm working at an insurance company, and I did tons of temporary jobs, as all actors do. And even when I went to college, I did not go directly to the drama department. I went to the French and English department and thought I would major in English and then minor in drama. And it took a while to say out loud, I'm an actor. And then I had to do it. Then I was running out of time and excuses.
You know what I think is funny? Like, your parents are thinking, It's a sleazy profession. It's not respectable. And you think, no, it's a fine profession. And then you end up having to play women who are selling their babies for crack.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I'm proud to be able to say now that every profession that my mother ever wanted me to do, I've done it in acting.
I have one more question for you. Remember earlier we were talking about how being from Guyana, You had, you know, a British accent, and wherever you went in the world, people would evaluate you based on your accent. And in America,
right,
people would treat you probably better than they treat African Americans because you were an outsider. Mm-hmm. And everybody has the people who they've kind of like colonialized and they look down on. What was it like growing up black in Guyana?
Well, we were the big cheese there. That was never knowing what racism's about. In Guyana, it's all about poverty. It's about haves and have-nots. And that's very, very different. It's not about the color of your skin because everybody's skin is black. The Indians, they're East Indians. They're the majority of the population. They're black also. The whites are so burnt and crispified. They look like black people there too. So there, it's a sort of, everybody is basically brown in Guyana, and the differences, and there are many cultural differences. There's East Indian, there's Hindu, there's Muslim, there's Christian. There is a native Indian. So there's all of that mix, but poverty is a great equalizer, and so that there are more people equal there than there are non-equal. And it's really about the haves and the have-nots, and in Guyana, I was a have.
CCH Pounder, speaking to Terry Gross in 2006. She plays Captain Claudette Wims in The Shield, now in its sixth season on the FX cable network.